This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 20th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 152. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, the BC Greens have a new leader, the NDP wants a snap fall election, I ask why reporters are banned from attending BC government news conferences, highlights of the week in provincial politics, and I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are governments doing a lousy job communicating about the coronavirus pandemic? Back in May, the Canadian COVID-19 Accountability Group called Canadian governments too secretive and paternalistic. Governments could be making matters worse. A coalition of three BC First Nations wants the Information and Privacy Commissioner to order the Ministry of Health to release the proximate anonymized locations of confirmed and presumed coronavirus cases. Heiltsuk, Newchalneth, and Chilcotin tribal councils say the NDP government is breaking the section of the Freedom of Information Law that requires information be released without delay if it is about a risk to the health or safety of the public or a group of people. Meanwhile, the province's six health authorities, which report to Minister Adrian Dix, successfully applied in late June for a 60-business-day extension to FOI request files. The commissioner already gave a two-month disclosure holiday when the pandemic hit, and government offices keep claiming a backlog. The politicians are doing nothing to clear that backlog. They're better off for it because it means fewer questions about how they spend your money. The system is broken, worse than it was before, and the public is the ultimate loser. Meanwhile, there was another so-called Freedom March in Vancouver on September 13th. Hundreds of anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers, and members of the QAnon cult marched around downtown Vancouver and rallied outside the Vancouver Art Gallery. Televangelist Laura Lynn Teller-Thompson was one of the speakers.
They're all talking about a second wave! You are the second wave!
Yes, you heard it correctly. She called them the second wave. If only our politicians were brave and transparent and able to handle the truth, then maybe there would be no anti-maskers, no anti-vaxxers, and no QAnon cult members. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Apple Daily, Hong Kong family solicits overseas support on social media to save detained son. Andy Lee is reportedly detained in Yanchan, a town in Shenzhen bordering Hong Kong, on suspicion of illegally crossing the border. His group of 12 was captured by Guangdong Coast Guard in mainland waters on August 23rd when trying to flee to Taiwan via speedboat. Lee was earlier arrested in Hong Kong under a sweeping national security law during an August 10th police swoop. He had been denied access to legal assistance, and his actual situation and whereabouts were unknown, the family said in a statement on Thursday. Mainland Chinese authorities have confirmed holding the 12 in Yanchan, but no lawyers appointed by the individual families seem to have been able to see the arrestees. Jason Gang and Michael Walsh in ABC News Australia. Chinese-Australian community fears guilt by association amid worsening diplomatic relations. Some community members want Australia to stand up to the Chinese Communist Party. There's a growing fear about voicing opinions in support of Beijing. Others are worried racist abuse might increase due to the tensions. Kyoto in the Japan Times. Aussie behind Suga's favorite pancakes hopes to cook at PM's place. Yoshihide Suga succeeded Shinzo Abe as Japan's prime minister last week. Bill Granger, owner of the Bill's restaurant chain, jokingly offered to make the famous ricotta hotcakes at the new prime minister's residence. The prime minister, who told the Nikkei Business Daily that he sometimes eats Granger's ricotta hotcakes, quote, 3 or 4 days a week, end quote, is known to line up outside the restaurant with other diners, something the chef thinks says a lot about the prime minister's character. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Douglas Perry in the Oregonian. Did a hunter find important D.B. Cooper evidence in woods 45 years ago? Long-forgotten FBI memo could spark new searches. Nearly 49 years ago, D.B. Cooper hijacked Northwest Orient Flight 305 out of Portland, strapped on a parachute, tucked away $200,000, lowered the Boeing 727 stairs, and jumped out. He's never been found or identified. A Phoenix-based entrepreneur believes a newly released 1975 document from the FBI will lead Cooper chasers like himself to find the skyjacker's parachute or even the man's remains. The memo says a hunter found a panel from an airplane near Cinnabar, Washington, that could be from a Boeing 727. AP in the Seattle Times. Inslee broke law by bringing apples to fire-ravaged areas. By bringing apples from trees growing at the governor's mansion in Olympia, Washington Governor Jay Inslee was violating state regulations about bringing homegrown fruit from an apple maggot quarantine area into pest-free counties. Inslee brought some of the apples to eastern Washington's fire-ravaged communities. His office said he regretted the mistake and called it a good reminder about apple quarantine awareness. Mary Griffin in Czech News. Friends of Beacon Hill Park Society going to court in attempt to get campers out. A trust established Beacon Hill Park in 1882. It restricts use within the park to strictly pleasure or recreational use. Roy Fletcher, who is with the society, says he's fighting the encampments to save the park. Those who work with the campers say the issue is not simple. Reverend Ellen Tissick, executive director of the Dandelion Society, said the shelters are full and the campers can't afford the rent in one of Canada's most expensive cities. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. British Columbia politics, never dull. First headline of the week, the BC Green Party has a new leader. Couch and MLA Sonia Furstenau narrowly beat Vancouver lawyer Cam Brewer on the second ballot when results were announced September 14th. Sunshine Coast Kim Darwin did not advance from the first ballot. In her acceptance speech, Furstenau had a message for the Premier and his desire for a snap election in late October. The Greens have supported the NDP minority since June 2017.
To John Horgan, I say, you have a responsibility to govern, not play politics. We have two overlapping health emergencies. We have just spent the last week gasping for our breath because of climate fires. Our kids are navigating an entirely new way of being in school, and COVID-19 cases are rising. This is not the time to dissolve government, to leave a province leaderless for over a month in hopes of securing more power for yourself. This is a time when we need our ministers of health and education to be working alongside our public health officer to do all they can to protect the health and well-being of the people of British Columbia. Do not succumb to the old ways of doing politics in this new and altered world. Instead, rise above partisanship and put the people you serve ahead of your party's self-interest.
The next day, Furstenau took questions from reporters. I asked about her first day as leader, specifically if she talked to John Horgan and what they talked about.
I did have a phone call with John Horgan last night. Of course, we have known each other since before I was an MLA. Part of our work in Shawnigan involved connecting with him when he was the leader of the opposition. And he and my husband, they go all the way back to high school. They went to high school together at Reynolds. We had a pleasant conversation, and I look forward to a follow-up to talk about how do we navigate through this time, putting the interests of British Columbians first and foremost in our minds. So the conversation yesterday was really a connection conversation, and I appreciated him reaching out. The conversation about CASA, we are going to follow up on that very soon.
Norman Spector, who was an aide to Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, expressed his feelings about a snap election in an open letter to Lieutenant Governor Janet Austin that was printed on the front page of the Times Colonist newspaper. Spector says Austin should tell Premier John Horgan to think twice if he visits Government House. BC has a good, stable government, and the NDP deal with the Greens set October 16, 2021, as the fixed election date. A premature power grab in a pandemic is wrong, Spector says. For the first time publicly, Horgan admitted he is pondering a snap election. On September 17th, he couldn't do anything but. Former NDP MPs Murray Rankin and Nathan Cullen suddenly announced their intention to run provincially. Cabinet ministers Michelle Mungall, Doug Donaldson, Scott Fraser, and Judy Darcy all said they would not run again.
I've not made a decision about an election. I've been working on, as I said, the difficult decisions of the trade-offs that are involved in making sure that we expend public resources in a way that's responsible for the taxpayer, but also meets the extraordinary demand in communities, whether it be revitalizing our health care, where, of course, a key part of our economy is the well-being of people, and a sense of comfort and assurance that when they go into the marketplace to conduct their business or to participate in the economy, that they can do so safely. That's been our preoccupation, quite frankly, and I think that this plan meets that test for today. And as I said, the pandemic is just beginning. I know that people would like to hear something different, but we're just starting a very long journey that we have to take together.
The $1.5 billion economic plan was launched in a shaky fashion. Reporters were given the wrong spreadsheet. The numbers didn't add up. So the Horgan photo op at a Victoria brewery was delayed by a half hour. Finance Minister Carol James.
You want to take this away from me, don't you?
Hi, everyone. Before we begin today, Minister James is going to speak for a moment.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us. We'll get to the formal part in a minute, but I just wanted to say I understand that there was a technical challenge and an issue around one of the slides as well. We had certainly planned to make sure that you had the documents a good 30 minutes ahead of time. That's why we had arranged everything the way we had. So I'm really sorry that didn't work out, but that's why we moved everything to 2 o'clock, so to give you the half an hour to make sure that you got all the documents and make sure you had all the time to look at them. So I'm sorry it didn't start off smoothly, but I promise it gets better.
The money was much less than what the tourism industry was expecting. The Vancouver Board of Trade was not impressed either. Then came Dr. Bonnie Henry and Adrian Dix with an extra urgent briefing on virus cases in BC, including a new one-day record.
So for today, September 17th, we have a new high of 165 people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19 here in British Columbia, including two who were epidemiologically linked. And that brings our total number of cases to 7,663 in British Columbia.
Yesterday, 7,674 tests, which is the highest that we have done in British Columbia since the beginning of the pandemic. 2,949 people who are contacts, who are under public health surveillance, who are in self-isolation, and 1,705 active cases. And I add to that 3,641 responses to 811 calls, which is a significant number as well. We're reminded yet again of cause and effect, how wildfires along the U.S. coast unexpectedly caused significant health outcomes here and forced us to quickly learn and adapt. Indications are that in a few days, the smoke will clear. And when it does, let's see COVID-19 more clearly for what it is, a complex virus for its impact on our health and our lives. But one we've learned we can push back by taking what are, I think we might agree, just a few basic steps to keep us all safe. Stick to physical distancing. Stick with regular hand washing. Stick to staying home if we're not feeling well. Stick with wearing a mask when it's the right thing to do. Stick to six. Make six the maximum number of people we socialize with outside our household bubble.
Later, the NDP launched its Strong BC for Everyone TV ad campaign to support the $1.5 billion announcement. The branding was recycled from the 2020 budget, but without the A, space, or comma. The image ad was just the kind that Horgan slammed when he was in opposition and the BC Liberals were in power. Horgan promised in the 2017 platform to end partisan ad spending and give the Auditor General veto power. Horgan is now in government, of course, and he did not fulfill his promise.
It's not always easy. But every morning, every day, we're getting life back on track. And BC's recovery plan is there working for you. Strengthening healthcare, getting people back to work, and helping us get ready for tomorrow. British Columbia is rebuilding, and together we can come back even stronger. Be a part of it at strongerbc.ca. A message from the government of British Columbia.
On February 16, 2017, the NDP's Gary Holman tabled the opposition bill aimed at banning publicly funded campaign ads. No surprise, the BC Liberal government rejected the bill.
I move that a bill entitled Banning Publicly Funded Campaign Advertisements 2017 be introduced and read for the first time.
Honourable members, you've heard the question. All those in favour? Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried.
The purpose of reintroducing the Government Advertising Act is to prevent any provincial government from using public dollars to promote its own political interests. Under this bill, all government advertising must be reviewed and approved by the Auditor General based on clearly defined criteria preventing advertising that promotes the partisan interests of the governing party or creates a negative impression of government critics. The bill requires government advertising to present information factually and objectively, and also bans all government advertising 4 months before the fixed election date.
This was what then NDP opposition leader John Horgan said in question period on March 2nd, 2017, about taxpayer-funded BC Liberal partisan ads before that year's election.
Well, Honourable Speaker, I've been watching hockey games, and it's more difficult. The Canucks aren't as good as they could be, but the ads are killing me. I can't watch my own hockey team anymore because the government is so bent on self-satisfying ads. So I want to ask the minister responsible, I believe it's the Minister of Propaganda over there. We know we have a fixed date for elections. We have virtually a fixed date for delivering budgets, but somehow we had to amend the propaganda budget for unforeseen circumstances. So a simple question, and it's a direct one. I know he'll appreciate that because I'm certain I'll get a direct answer back. Can the minister tell me how much it cost the people of BC to advertise during the Oscars last Sunday?
And finally, the BC Teachers Federation complained to the Labour Relations Board against the BC Ministry of Education's back-to-school plan. The union says working conditions are unsafe. The BCTF bluntly states, the government is failing. So, as they say, the worst day in government is always better than the best day in opposition. But it came at a time when Horgan was ramping up for an election. That still may happen. Meanwhile, on September 18th, the BC NDP Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure, Clara Trevena, and Federal Liberal Environment Minister Jonathan Wilkinson held a re-announcement of the $1 billion bailout for public transit and BC ferries. Trevena is a former BBC and CBC reporter. I asked her about the policy since June to ban reporters from attending news conferences in person.
The next question from Bob Mackin, Breaker News.
Good afternoon. First for Minister Trevena. The provincial government has put students back in schools in front of teachers. Staff on TransLink, BC Transit, BC Ferries are all facing the public. Masks, physical distancing, and plexiglass are now a fact of life. So why won't the BC government allow reporters to attend its news conferences in person? You're a former reporter yourself. Are you now afraid of reporters?
We're having a very effective news conference right now to announce some really important information, which is more than $1 billion going into public transit around the province. We have active participation from reporters around the province to have this opportunity to question us as ministers and leaders in the agencies about how we're going to be doing this and how it's going to roll out.
But it's been about 4 months since you've actually had a news conference in front of a group of reporters here in British Columbia. Meanwhile, you're putting workers back in front of the public. We have masks. We know how to physical distance. You're not letting us in front of you, and there's an election on the horizon. My next question is for Minister Wilkinson. Your mandate letter says that the Liberal government is open by default, and it defends the Charter, which protects the freedom of the press. And your mandate letter also makes special note of the importance of the media and the democratic process. The Prime Minister allows reporters to attend his news conferences, so why did you agree today to appear at this news conference without reporters in attendance?
Well, I think in this age, there's certainly lots of things that we are learning as we move through COVID-19. There are times where it is more appropriate to have reporters present, and there are times where it's just simpler to actually do things online. And this is one of those days. I think that all of us are learning, and certainly there's no intent. There's no intent to in any way avoid questions. In fact, I guess we're answering your questions right now. So,
but you won't let me ask another question.
No, Bob, thank you. Our last question.
I mean, my chance to have another question.
No, you've had your follow-up, Bob. Thank you. Our last question is from John Sechrist, News 11:30.
It looks like John has actually dropped off the line.
Thank you. That's all the questions we have today. Thank you for joining us, everyone.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
I do not want an election. I don't think Canadians want an election. I think Canadians want politicians to work together, to serve them, to build a better future for them and keep them safe during this COVID crisis. I think it's irresponsible to say that an election would be irresponsible. Our country and our institutions are stronger than that. And if there has to be an election, we'll figure it out. I don't think that's what Canadians want. I don't think that's what opposition parties want. And it's certainly not what the government wants. What we want to be able to do is focus 100% on keeping Canadians safe every step of the way, and that's what we're going to do.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Terry Fox Foundation. Today is the day for the 40th anniversary of one of Canada's greatest traditions, carrying on the run to end cancer that Terry Fox began in 1980. It's virtual this year because of the pandemic, so wherever you are, whatever you can afford, join in. Go to terryfox.org. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 20th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 20th in 1973, Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes tennis match at the Houston Astrodome? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.